The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So we've just done this beautiful ceremony with some of my favorite hymns, invocations, and while we were singing Vaisaja Guru Tathagata, O Buddha of Radiant Health, it occurred to me it might be nice to tell you that the monk who wrote this actually suffered from deep depression on and off all his life, and yet he was able to write this beautiful invocation. And it just shows you that no matter what the suffering, the Buddha is there and can come through us. So I'm just going to mention a few things at first, is that in the early Buddhist texts, healing is talked about from, and I'm going to talk about healing, reflections on healing. So healing is talked about from three points of view. The first is the cure of disease through healing agents like herbs and foods, surgery, and other physical means. The Buddha taught this, and he encouraged his monks to help those who were sick, to take care of them in a physical way. The second is there are spiritual causes and cures for disease. The Buddha talked about this, and Rev. Master Jiyu talked about this quite a bit. And the third is the healing process as a metaphor for spiritual growth, with the Buddha as the supreme physician and the Dharma as the king of medicines. I found this in the book called The Healing Buddha by Raoul Birnbaum, and I found a few other things in there as well. I happen to love this invocation called the Parable of the Herbs. I don't know if it's herbs or herbs. And I can't read the whole thing because it would take too long. But I think I'm just going to read a few verses because it talks about the Buddha as teaching that which truly heals, the great physician and the Dharma being the great medicine. So the Buddha spoke thus in verse, the parable of the herbs. The Dharma is like a great cloud rising above the world, covering all things everywhere. A beneficent cloud, full of moisture, flashes of lightning shine and glint. The voice of thunder vibrates from afar, bringing gladness and ease to all. The sun's rays are veiled and the earth is cooled. The cloud lowers and spreads as if it might be caught and gathered. Its rain everywhere equally descends on all sides, streaming and pouring without stint, enriching all the land, on mountains, by rivers, in steep valleys, and in hidden recesses. So I'm going to skip now to the last few verses. In the same manner, the Buddha also appears in the world, like a great cloud universally covering all things. And having appeared in the world, he, for the sake of all beings, discriminates and proclaims the reality of the holy laws. The great holy world-honored one among humans, high and low, proclaims this, saying thus to all, I am the Tathagata, the most honored among human beings. I appear in the world just as a great cloud to pour enrichment on all parched living beings, to free them all from misery, and so attain the joy of peace, joy in the world, and the joy of nirvana. Humans high and low, with all your mind hearken unto me. Come all of you here and behold the peerless honored one. I am the world honored one who cannot be equaled. To give peace to all creatures I appear in the world. And for the hosts of the living, preach the law, pure as the sweet dew, the one and only law of emancipation and of nirvana. So if you think you're left out of this healing rain, the Buddha is saying otherwise. that nobody is left out. The rain falls on all equally, according to what they need. So the law, as he speaks of, or the Dharma, is that which heals. Not the teacher, not the Buddha, not the teacher. And I read this also in The Healing Buddha. The teacher remains the vessel conveying the law to all who are ill. So it's the Dharma that heals us. And in the early Buddhist text, between the first century BCE through the first century CE, they started talking about two bodhisattvas of healing. The brothers King of Healing by Sajaraja and Supreme Healing Healer by Saja Sumudgata. And they are the first bodhisattvas to appear in Buddhist texts whose primary quality is the ability to heal. And they are mentioned in a number of Mahayana texts. And later, the name Baisaja Guru was used and was standardized, and he became a Buddha in his own right and in his own land, the Buddha in the land of bright lapis lazuli, which we recited many times today. And the healing that Baisaja Guru offers us is the Dharma, the precious gem. When we ask for help, call on the healing Buddha or another Buddha or Bodhisattva, the illness doesn't necessarily go away, nor does the pain. But we can find a different way of looking at it, a deeper acceptance and a deep peace. And this precious gem is more precious than a healthy body. And a number of people who have had very serious illnesses who were facing possible death found that it was a blessing because they were able to go, something helped them, first of all. Compassion was there. However, whatever form compassion will take, compassion was there. And they turned towards the Dharma more. There was the impetus to change and to do things that maybe they weren't willing to do before. So serious illness, physical illness, can be a real blessing if you take it in the right way and know that you will be given the help that you need when this occurs. And there's actually this story at the time of the Buddha of one of his disciples, Samitigutta, who had a hopeless case of leprosy. And this goes back to the second point on healing, that illnesses can have spiritual causes. Physical illnesses can have spiritual causes. And this monk was taught by the Buddha a type of meditation. He told him to meditate on feelings. And although he had very serious leprosy, and although he was probably in severe pain, he mustered up this incredible, profound effort and did this meditation and achieved liberation. However, he wasn't cured of his illness. He still had leprosy, and he was still going to die from it, but the most important thing had shifted. He saw the causes in his past lives of this illness, of what caused the illness at the present time. And sometimes what we do in the present can cause illnesses also at this time. Being freed by insight, though still afflicted with this fatal disease, he said, "Whatso of evil wrought in bygone days, in former births by me, just here and now, 'tis that whereby I lie and suffer sore, but other ground for ill exists no more." So, although when we do get physically ill, we can get very scared, it can bring on the fear of death, if we can train deeply at that time, we find the most important thing, the thing that is beyond birth and death. And it can be a blessing. Now, we can also obviously suffer in other ways, suffer spiritually from various things, and calling on actually, you know, the true medicine that he's offering is the Dharma, which I've said before. When we call on Baisaja Guru for help, or one of the other bodhisattvas, I often call on Kanzion, which I feel an affinity with, great compassion. It doesn't take away our suffering. Our suffering isn't automatically lifted. Just as when we turn within, our illness isn't necessarily healed. But something can shift so that we can be with our suffering. And we can see it from a different point of view. And we can understand it. And this is what I found has helped. And it is not just hearing the Dharma that helps, because we can heal it, as Rev. Master Ji would say, until we're blue in the face. She used to love that expression. We have to put it into practice, as I think you all know, especially when things are difficult. I have spoken with people in spiritual counseling who are having a very difficult time, and when I ask them if they've kept up their meditation, they say no. It can happen that when things are very difficult, we don't want to meditate because we don't want to be with the suffering. We want it to go away. We want to find some way out of it. And of course, that doesn't work. And for myself, I never stop meditating because I know that meditation is what really helps. But in my meditation, I turn away in subtle ways. This is what I have been doing in the past. I distract myself with a lot of thinking, and then after meditation with a lot of doing. And this is, you know, it helps to go to the meditation and to try, but there are subtle ways in which we can distract ourselves from just being with the suffering. It can be very difficult to be with the suffering that arises for us. And when I was first here, I had a lot of suffering, and I had this big karmic cloud that was right there in front of me, and it kept getting in the way of my doing what would actually help my suffering. I just wasn't ready for it. I was always getting angry when there was a lot of pain, when I wasn't getting what I wanted. I would be angry. And just to show you that the Buddha is always there helping us, no matter what. Even with this huge karmic cloud, something in me kept saying and knowing, you need to sit still with the pain and not give in to anger. And I knew that, but I didn't do it. One time I was angry for 3 months because I wasn't doing well spiritually and I was mad at people who were. And I kept this up for 3 months, and then something inside me said, that's enough. You just have to accept. You just have to accept. So I did. But it took years of persevering and doing the practice to the best of my ability that the karma started lessening and I could see more clearly. And I learned that I could actually be with the suffering. And it was actually when I finally listened to that voice that said, be with the pain, do not give in to anger, that something shifted for me. And it was actually then that I was named a master. Most people were named a master, people younger than me in training, many, many years before. And this was actually a great source of suffering because I really wanted to be a master. And when I finally accepted the pain and accepted that I might never be named a master, that things turned around. And I was. And here I am, still with my difficulties, but I think I'm training with them a little better now. So perseverance in this practice really helps. And I think there's no substitute for it, because in the early days of my being here, I just could not see around my suffering. And I didn't have the faith and trust to do what was being asked, to follow the teaching that Reverend Master Jiyu was pointing to, that a lot of monks were pointing to. I just couldn't do it. But something in me just kept on going. There was the longing. There was the longing for the truth, the longing to be at peace that kept me going and still keeps me going. But I had to just keep trusting, keep going on, no matter what. And something always came through and helped me. The Buddha nature was always there, sometimes through another person and sometimes through my own meditation, if I was willing to listen. And I was. So I think that's part of it, perseverance and listening. And in fact, when I was first here, I had very little faith in myself. That was my first question to Reverend Master Jiyu, was, I don't have any faith in myself. And she said, well, you keep on going, you know, you keep going to the meditation. Something must have faith. But at one point, my doubt was so great that I started thinking about leaving. And this was in 1975. But I hadn't actually told Reverend Master Jiyu that I was thinking of this. But interestingly enough, one of the other monks was also having doubts and thinking of leaving. And that's what actually got me started on thinking about leaving as well, were her doubts. And in the end, she didn't leave. But in the end, I was asked to leave. And so that was kind of ironic, if that's the right word. And Reverend Master Jiyu said to me, I have faith in you, but until you have faith in yourself, I can't teach you. So she gave me an opening that I could come back when I had faith in myself. And I also was doubting the teachings and everything. But as soon as I left, I wanted to come back. That really helped me. You know, being away really helped me to see how much I wanted to be back and how much I wanted to do this practice and how much I wanted to have faith. Actually, I was asked to leave twice. Once a year later, but for a different reason. And what happened, I remember why I was asked to leave each time, but what happened when I left has all become blurred, and I don't know which one was which one. So I'm going to kind of lump them all together. I think it helped me to leave because I had to really focus on my meditation and really work on my faith. And I kept a diary. I actually found compassion out there in the world. I can't remember which time it was, but I was living at the YWCA, $25 a week. And I was eating, like I would buy the, I had no money. I tried to sell my blood. I sold my hair that it had been cut off when I was ordained. I sold a gold ring. I tried to find work, but I was eating basically a bag. They had a place where you could heat things up, and I was eating a bag of frozen vegetables that I would heat up every day. That's why I couldn't give blood, because I didn't have enough iron in my system, because I was just eating these frozen vegetables. But then one day, I found that there was work picking cherries. I was living in downtown Oakland, and you could pick cherries. You had to be in this place in downtown Oakland at 4 in the morning. The bus would pick you up, and you'd go out and pick cherries. And the faster you could pick, you know, the more money you would earn. And all these people were picking cherries really, really fast. And I was so slow that I barely got anything. But when I went the next day to pick cherries, they didn't want me. So there I was, in downtown Oakland at 4 in the morning, and this very kind man came up to me and he said, it is not safe for you to be here. I'm going to walk you home. So there was compassion right there in the heart of downtown Oakland. Believe it or not, I wasn't afraid because I was just one of these poor people. Not that Oakland is all poor, but I was just one of these people who was in a very difficult strait. And also, the person who ran the YWCA, he called me in one day because I couldn't meet my $25. I couldn't get work. One time I got welfare for a month, and that met my $25. And he called me in, and he said, you know that you are not the usual type that comes to the YWCA, so I'm going to give you an extra week to get that. And I was able to get it in another week. So he was very kind and compassionate. So I found a lot of compassionate people. And there was another. And eventually I ended up at the Berkeley Buddhist Priory, and Reverend Master Jiyu and some of her monks were coming down to teach a class at UC Berkeley, and they invited me to come along. And I gave her the diary of what I had written. Sorry to go on and on about this, but it seems to be fitting. And she called me up. She said she would read it. And when she went back to the Abbey, she read it and she said, yeah, I can see your faith is strong. You can come back. So she left the door open for me and I came back. And the other time, another thing happened and I could come back. So, but each time I left, I knew I wanted to be here, and I knew I wanted to train. So I would say they benefited me in many ways, and seeing the compassion out there, I think, was really helpful. Meditation and training, keeping of the precepts, is what heals. And the Dharma, when practiced, is the healing balm. During this last silent meditation retreat, during the first day, I had to laugh at myself because I thought of the meditation as anything but a healing balm. It was very difficult. It was very painful. And I had to force myself to sit. But it's doing this. It's turning towards the Dharma, turning towards our meditation, keeping the precepts no matter how we feel, that it actually does become the healing balm. And I found that later in the retreat, I found by sitting with something that was difficult that stillness was there. So it did become the healing balm later, but we have to be willing to just be with whatever's there and to put the teaching into practice, to keep the precepts no matter how we're feeling. And I wanted to give an example of the healing balm of meditation. It was when my cat, Emma, whom I loved dearly, was dying. And she was dying of kidney failure. One of the results, I don't think that's that common, she had these terrible ulcers in her mouth that were very painful. And we were trying everything we could to ease her pain. And I was sitting there one day with her, and I can still picture it. She was on my desk. It was so painful for me to be there with her suffering and not be able to do anything about it. So then I went into meditation, and there was this wonderful stillness and this connection with her in stillness that was more important than the pain. And I just felt like, oh, it's okay. And that was really healing. So you never know what healing will come from meditation and keeping the precepts. And persevering, I think I just have to keep saying that, never giving up on yourself. And just to give an example of how things change when you train, is when early on, when I'd make a mistake in training, like act selfishly, give in to greed or anger, want things my way, I would be really hard on myself afterwards, very judgmental, thinking I will never change. Again, because the karma was so strong and I didn't see how I could change. It just kept coming up. And I also felt like I couldn't look at the mistake. I think the harshness came from the fact that I did this kind of thing so often. I didn't have a handle on refraining. As I mentioned before, the karma clouds were very strong and I really couldn't see around them. Now, although I still make mistakes, I still give in to greed and anger. I do it less often. And what has shifted is that the karmic clouds are less, I really want to train. I really want to keep the precepts, and something keeps telling me that I really want to do the practice no matter how I'm feeling. And also, I'm more willing not to turn away when I make a mistake because I want to learn the lesson of what I did and I want to change, because what's most important to me is to know the unborn. And still the self, I mean, greed for food is something I have to work on all the time and don't always do so well with. But at any rate, I'm trying. And also, when we make mistakes, it's very helpful to know, to remember that we are the ones judging ourselves. There is no outside, you know, God or Buddha or whatever who is judging us. That the universe is benevolent, and the heart of all things is great compassion. And if we can just remember that and turn towards that and just keep on going. The thing that helped me turn all this around was that I finally realized that to dwell in my mistake and my suffering and go on this kind of downward spiral didn't help anyone. It didn't help me and it didn't help other people. So what was the point? And that actually helped me get over things more quickly. And another aspect of suffering, and when, you know, sometimes suffering is really suffering, and sometimes suffering is just that which is coming up. If we don't give it energy, it can arise and pass more easily. If we don't believe in it, and this is what makes suffering really suffering, is when we believe in it and we sink down into it. But as we go on and we stop believing it so completely, we can let it come and go more easily. And also, suffering is truly suffering when we don't believe that it is enough to just be with it. We don't have to do anything else. And sometimes a certain kind of suffering that arises in me, I really want it to go away. Or I really want something to come and help me. You know, somehow show me the truth right now so I know the suffering isn't real. But I just have to be with it. And that's what I'm learning to do. And that's when meditation can become the healing balm. When we can be with it and not fight it, then it's not truly suffering. And I have a comment from one of our lay congregations, someone who's part of the reading group that I'm leading this term, and I do have her permission to say it, and I'm not going to give her name. We were talking about this in some way, and she said that when depression would arise for her in the past, and forgive me, anonymous person, if I have this wrong, but when depression would arise in the past, she would go wild with it. She would try and do things, try and make it go away, sink into it, just believe in it and feel awful. And this would happen with other things as well, so that she was being pulled around in all directions. But with the training and the growing of faith, when this would arise for her now, she could just be with it. And in her heart was this little bit of light, this faith that was there no matter what was going on externally. And Reverend Master Jiyu talks about this as well. If you can just look up, you can see the light within the blackness. You can see the light coming through the clouds. I just wanted to mention that the Buddha taught that there is suffering and that there is a cessation of suffering. He never said that life is suffering. So we can find the cure for our suffering. We can be healed from our spiritual illness. So, thank you.